your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Bright the cheeks and warm the heart, for tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, the season that drives the cold winter away. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, light your bonfire, today is Beltane.
Catch the sun on the sea. The ring of the morris bells brings on the May morning. Set free your spirit, come dance up the dawn.
Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, the season that drives the cold winter away. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, light your bonfire, today is Beltane.
Down west and past, oh, the wheel spins round and round, fired by the teaser who's calling him on. Out the people for dancing and song.
High on Mount Caven, we look down on Talking Land. The mist rolls away, catch the sun on the sea. The ring of the morris bells rings on the May morning. Set free your spirit, come dance up the dawn. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, the season that drives the cold winter away. Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, light your bonfire.
Summer, the season that drives the cold winter away.
Hail to the summer, hail to the summer, light your bonfire, today is Beltane.
Hey, merry meet everybody, blessed Beltane, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para X Radio Network. You know, there are so many songs about Beltane, but I think the one that you just heard, Weaving the Summer by Spiral Dance, is my number one favorite today because, as the lyric states, as I said, today is Beltane. Now, in layman's terms, it's May Day, and it's one of the four Gaelic seasonal festivals, along with Samhain, Imbolc, and Lugnasa. And Beltane is one of the last three spring fertility festivals, the others being Imbolc and Ostara. Now, Beltane and its counterpart Samhain divide the year into two primary seasons, winter, the dark part obviously, and summer, the light. And while Samhain is about honoring death, Beltane, its counterpart, is about honoring life. And like Samhain, it's a time of no time, when the veils between the two worlds are at the thinnest. And no time is when two worlds intermingle and unite and the magic abounds. And it's a time when the fairies return from their winter respite, carefree, full of fairy mischief and delight. And on the night before Beltane, in past times, people would place rowan branches at their windows and doors for protection, because many otherworldly occurrences could transpire during this time of no time. Now, celebrations include frolicking through the countryside, maypole dancing, leaping over fires to ensure fertility, circling the fire three times sunwise for good luck, feasting, music, bonfires, so much more. And it's also a wonderful time for spell work. And this is my clever segue that leads me right into tonight's guest. Now, author Jen McConnell is a devotee of Isis, but she works closely with a number of goddesses. She's been published in Sage Woman and Pangaea and blogs at Witches and Pagans, and she's here tonight to talk about her new book, Goddess Spells for Busy Girls. Jen, welcome, and again, thanks for sharing Beltane Night with me.
Thank you, Marla. I couldn't think of a better way to spend it.
Oh, that's nice of you. And, you know, I really enjoyed reading your book, going through it. And this is not a put down at all, but I always say sometimes I'm a lazy witch, okay? And that is because I do things rather simply. And I like that you say right off the bat in the book that simple spells can yield amazing results. Because I think a lot of people are hesitant to even try doing spell work because they think it involves days of intense preparation and very complicated ritual, which isn't always the case, is it?
Very true. And, you know, I take no offense at that at all. I'm a rather lazy witch myself. So this book really was just a chance for me to show how easy magic really can be.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take all the bells and whistles that people just kind of freak out about. And, you know, you say, and this is interesting because, I mean, there's all kinds of magic for people that don't know. I mean, there's chaos magic, there's this magic, there's that magic. And you say that goddess magic is a very powerful magic, and it brings an extra sparkle that the goddesses bring to everything. So the simple definition of goddess magic is invoking a particular goddess in our spell work, correct?
Correct.
Okay, you want to get into that maybe a little bit. I mean, that's simple, but maybe not to some. I mean, to me, it's okay, you know, choose a goddess and work with her and see how that goes, but talk a little bit more about the goddesses, about how we work with them in spell work.
Oh, absolutely. There are so many global goddesses, and it's just amazing to get to know these various ladies. And for me, goddess magic really stems from the mythology. It stems from taking the time to know the stories and decide who will best suit my intention and ask those questions very carefully. So maybe it's because I'm a writer, but the magic starts with the story. And in this book, I try to present stories as well as simple spells people can do as they come to know these goddesses a little bit better. You can mm-hmm. do this if you don't have any background on the goddesses. You can do this if you have years and years of experience with a particular goddess. It's very accessible magic. Mm-hmm. It, as you said, it doesn't take the bells and whistles. It really is open, and like many of the goddesses are, open to just about everybody.
Mm-hmm. And see, people may not realize that. I mean, they may call in a spirit guide, or they may call in, you know, something. People work with all kinds of things. You know, a lot of people work with fairies, the fae. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. It's not that I didn't put two and two together. I just, when I saw goddess magic, it's like a light bulb went on over my head, because it was like something new to me, but in actual fact, it wasn't. I can't even explain it. But it's just so obvious, you know, because we do call in goddesses and gods and all kinds of things when we need help. But to put it simply in a book, you know, okay, this is goddess magic, this is how you do it, it's just kind of blew my mind in a really good way. And I shouldn't be surprised, but I was. I was really surprised, probably at myself for being an idiot, but it just seemed like, wow, yeah, that's right. Now, let's talk a little bit about patron goddesses, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but a patron goddess is someone we resonate with and choose to work with all the time. And that kind of comes, people might understand this better by talking about spirit guides, who we are told have one main guide from birth to death, but other ones come in when needed. And so is that kind of the same thing by choosing a patron goddess and then being able to call in others as well?
I think spirit guides is a beautiful illusion for that. And you don't have to choose a patron goddess if you want to work goddess magic. I work very closely with Isis, and she's been a force in my life for longer than I think I even realized. But it's never once hampered me from working with a different goddess if someone else suits the spell a little bit better. And Isis doesn't mind, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like with spirit guides, you can call in a specialist is the way I put it. You know, somebody that knows that particular thing. And the same goes for the goddesses, because they all have their certain attributes. And sometimes we need a little of this or a little of that. And I don't think one minds one bit if you use somebody else. It's just kind of neat to be able to pick and choose, and or maybe they choose us and we're not aware of it. I don't know. I've always had a very strong feeling with Bree, and it just kind of resonates for some reason. Always did, and even though when I had my last puppy, she was a little mischievous thing, and I named her Callie, you know, Callie Ma. I think we all, if we pick up a list of goddesses and see their attributes, or even just see like pictures, because people do impressions of what they look like and stuff, there will be one that always jumps out at you. And yes. I know it's not necessary to have a patron goddess, but I kind of like the idea that we can, you know, that we can work with them on a regular basis.
It is. It's really wonderful to have that long-term relationship, too. You know, it's great to be able to work with anybody I need to, but I know I can always go back to Isis. I know she's always there, and my relationship with her changes, which is fascinating, too. It's not static. These are still very vibrant forces.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also kind of similar to spirit guides, you say that goddesses are easy to approach, and they want to help. How does the person begin to choose which goddess they want to work with? I mean, is there like, you know, a simple way? Because people might think it might be difficult. And once they decide who, then how does one call upon them?
It really depends on what your intention is. For me, as I said, it all starts with the story. If I need, you know, assistance in clear thinking, I may be more drawn to a story of Athena. And as I read more of her myths and come to know that aspect of her a little bit more, I find an entry point. It really depends on who you want to work with, but it all goes back to intention. If you have a clear intention and you truly know what you're going after, even if you just kind of call on, you know, goddess of love, not sure who I want to call you right now, but I need your help, you'll find response. The phone line is always on with them. They're ready to listen. They're ready to jump in.
Mm-hmm. And that's always really heartening to know. Now, there are two ways to use your book, either by issue or by goddess. And you have, I think, 25 goddesses listed in the book. Mm-hmm. and certain spells that go along with that particular need, reason, whatever. You have the attributes, you have other names, colors, animals, cultures of origin, and then a goodly amount of history about, you know, the backstory of these goddesses as well. And I think you make it so easy for people to pick up this book and get to work on it that it's kind of wonderful.
Thank you. That was my hope. I've always loved history and mythology and goddess stories, and I really wanted to find a way to bring that into something easy that anybody could pick up, even if they've never done magic before, even if they don't even really know what to call magic, even if it's all just story to them. I wanted to create something that was accessible, and I'm so glad that came through.
Mm-hmm. Accessible and understandable. I mean, I picked up the book just now, and it flew open to breathe, which, you know, synchronicities, maybe, but, you know, so I think I'm compelled to kind of tell people what it says, and this is for each goddess. Like, her titles are Foster Mother of Christ, the White Lady, Triple Goddess, the Bright One. Her attributes are fire, creativity, smithcraft, jewelry making, baking, dairy products, and poetry. Her colors are white, red, yellow. Her animals are sheep and cattle. And her culture of origin is Irish Celtic. And so, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, because there's two more pages about her, the storylines and everything. And then you have wonderful spells, like a spell for mundane magic. When you need to add a little sparkle to your daily routine, you use this spell. This comes under her heading. Or the spell to spark creativity, which I think we all need from time to time, especially maybe like on Monday mornings after a long, comfortable weekend. You've got a spell for comfort. I mean, and they're easy to do, and they're not things that you need to run out to the occult shop and buy. The comfort spell, all you need is a bread recipe, a few hours of quiet time, and honey. Okay, we can all find that. We can make that happen.
Absolutely.
So, that's what I'm saying. It the simplicity of it, but again, the simplistic spells are very effective. And it's just really, I mean, I want to try some of these like immediately, you know, and I've been trying to find the time, but haven't been able to quite yet. But just looking at them, I'm like, oh, this is a piece of cake. And like I said, do I do ritualistic magic? Yeah, once in a while I do. I think we all do. Do we have time for that all the time? And there's so many things to remember and all the tools and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, life is too busy for that most of the time. But I found that short, simple spells work equally well to those ritualistic ones. Although I love the ritual. You know, I love the whole process of it. Mm-hmm. But this is why it's goddess spells for busy girls. And not just girls. I'm going to kind of, you know, talk a little bit about that too. Because, you know, you list the goddesses and things. But guys can also call on goddesses.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think it's gender specific.
It really could. This book really, again, guys can call on goddesses. They can work amazing goddess magic. But when I was writing this, my deepest intention was to create something for girls in their 20s and 30s and girls who kind of sometimes need that extra sparkle and that extra push. Everybody needs that sparkle from time to time, but that was my primary audience when I wrote this.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we've some of the gods, I was looking up goddesses of Beltane, and we've got a lot. I mean, just a few: Aphrodite, Artemis, Astarte, Venus, Diana, Freya, Rhiannon. What kind of magic should we use on or around Beltane? Do you have any particular spells or rituals that you like doing?
Oh, I do. There's so much at this time of year because it is this abundant, rich, fertile festival. So there's so many things you can do. But one in particular that I like to do is a spell for good luck. And it's simple, and it can be done alone, or it can be done at a social gathering or at your circle, wherever you choose to do it. And all you need is champagne and an extra glass beyond however many people are there. And
okay.
It's simply a matter of pouring the champagne, blessing it, toasting it, and then leaving the glass for the goddess, and then drinking the rest of your own.
Wow. Now, how much simpler can that be? Plus, you get champagne. There's
exactly.
The added bonus. Yeah. Symbolically, if you don't drink, you can use something else, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. Sparkling cider is wonderful. Anything with bubbles. The goddess is just like things that bubble.
Is this across the board for all the goddesses? They all like bubbles?
Not all of them, but predominantly any of the goddesses you'd want to talk to on Beltane, which are very, very
bubbly.
Rich and bubbly. Yes.
Yeah, and the fairies are bubbly around this time of year, too. I mean, it is.
Yes, they are.
This has been such a miserable, miserable winter for so many people, Midwest to East. And I was talking to someone this morning from the East Coast, and I said, you know, because he said, well, you know, it's sunny here, and there's a little breeze, and after this long, horrible winter, I'm almost feeling human again. And I said, well, you need to go out and look for flowers, because this is Beltane.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go out and look for buds, see what's blooming. And he says, you know, he said, I did that. I was doing that right before I called you, and he said, I found flowers. And he said, it just lifted my heart, and I can feel the warmth coming now, you know, he said, after this horrible, horrible winter. So that's why today, I mean, today is the day of new beginnings, and yes, people are still having miserable weather, I know that. I think our weather is really, really weird this year, in a good way.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I think Mother Earth has been kind of taking pot shots at some of us for, you know, kind of ruining her world. I don't know what it is. You know, it could be global warming, could be, I don't know. You know, there's a thousand different things. But the weather has definitely been absurdly bad for many. Mm-hmm. And even though, like here in California, we did not have any of that, I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, because it just can't be 2/3 of the nation are getting it and we're just scot-free. No, it can't happen. I just, you know, not that I'm a fatalist, but I'm a realist. And so, you know, maybe this incredibly hot weather we're having this early, you know, it's not supposed to be 100 degrees tomorrow in May, but it will be. And today was pretty close to that. So I think it's a good time, even in that respect, to make contact with the goddesses and make them your friends at this point, because we need them. You know, who would be the goddess of weather?
Oh, Oya.
I mean, I'm sure there's more than one. Yeah, I'm sure there's
Oh, yeah, there's many. Oya comes to mind. She's a African diaspora goddess of storms and whirlwinds, and maybe she comes to my mind because I'm in North Carolina and we've had tornado watches all week, so that definitely falls in her jurisdiction. It's been such a strange season, and hopefully we're turning the corner, but we really just need to go outside, walk in the grass barefoot, and talk to mom again and say, hey, what can we do to fix this?
Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say that we could just kind of, without any ritual at all, or without even knowing exactly what we're doing, if we know, say, Oya is for, or Freya, both are for weather, can't somebody just, and they don't have to be pagan, can't somebody just say, I'm calling upon you to help? And, I mean, just something that simple, and then talk to them. What do you need?
Absolutely.
What do you want? Mm-hmm. So
absolutely. It can be an easy dialogue. And like you said, it doesn't have to be in any particular fashion, any particular person. Any of us could simply say, I want to help. What do you need?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's also good to have your book, because and also to look up offerings for what you can do back, because this is not a one-way street. You know.
Absolutely. Gratitude is a huge part of magic, and I included a whole section in the book on ways to show gratitude, because it can be easy to just take and take and take, because it's magic and it's awesome, but they're helping us. We need to do something in return, and it should come from a heart place, not from a place of obligation or guilt.
Exactly, and that's what I was going to bring up. The last chapter in your book is called Attitude of Gratitude. and for, you know, any spell work we do, and even talking to our guides or the guardians or the doorkeepers or whoever, the archangels that mm-hmm. we call down, people forget to thank them. And it's not necessarily that you always have to leave an offering, but you do need to even verbally acknowledge a thanks.
Yes.
And
my favorite way for simple thanks, and I think this is in the book, I've got wind chimes all over the place. And so many of the goddesses I work with like music and like pretty sounds. And I just leave wind chimes around my space, outside, inside. And whenever the wind hits them, I send my thanks up whenever I hear the bells.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because my friend just put wind chimes up and they're lovely. I thought it would get on my nerves after a while, but these are really deep tones and beautiful tones. And we've had some pretty strong wind here, and it's really nice. So I just think that we're pleasing people and we don't even know it. You know, we're pleasing other beings around with the wind chimes, and I think it's really nice. And
yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's good, like, you know, sometimes when you're thanking fairies, when you're working with the fae, there are certain things that they like, and you can build them an altar, and you can, you know, have all natural things and everything. And that helps. And they are a little bit mischievous, so it's kind mm-hmm. of better sometimes to placate them in the way that they're supposed to be. But I just don't think that goddesses or guides or anything are that particular. I mean, there's certain things probably that they don't like, but in general, it's just, it's not this big magilla to do that, to be thankful, to show your thanks. And it's really important. And here's the thing, they're not going to turn their back on you if you don't. That's the beautiful part. Well, maybe mm-hmm. one or two, maybe the darker ones might. But in general, they won't. I mean, they give us unconditional love. And they just look and say, okay, well, that one didn't learn right, you know. But they're not going to, you know, throw things at you or trip you as you walk past, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. And they give us opportunities to learn if we don't say thank you the first time. They stick around and they wait. They're very patient, which is most of them, but yeah, it doesn't have to be anything particular. There's always certain things that certain goddesses like more than others, certain colors, certain smells, certain foods, but as long as it's heartfelt and you mean it, they're mm-hmm. generally happy to accept the thanks.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I got really happy about in my research was poking around looking for Beltane information. And I actually found something, one Beltane activity that I hadn't heard about before, but it ties into what we've been talking about in general about thanking. It's a goddess garden. And you basically,
ooh.
You choose the goddess that you'd like to honor. And then if you're working with, you know, kind of a vibrant, outdoorsy kind of goddess like Diana, perhaps she'd appreciate a spot in the sun, maybe a water goddess who would feel more at home by a pond. A goddess of darkness might prefer a shady spot like near a tree line. And you don't have to plant this garden in the ground if you don't have space. Container gardening works well too. But the trick is it's important to try and select an area where the divine will feel a sense of home. Like if you're planting a garden for Bast, for example, you might want to plant some catnip, you know. Or for one of the harvest goddesses, you'd plant fall blooming plants or maybe root vegetables. And
that is
so,
a beautiful idea.
It is, and people who get your book will really get some help because of the 25 goddesses that you already have in there with details like, you know, all the attributes and things. And I just realized that a goddess garden, wow, that sounded very cool. So
that
made
my day. That's a mm-hmm. great idea. And it's funny because I'm not very good at gardening, but I like to because it is a good way to connect with goddess and with nature and earth. And I do that in little pieces, but I've never done it in a formal garden. Like, I keep papyrus in pots for Isis, and I've occasionally tried to grow roses for Aphrodite, but I've never done it quite as intentionally. That is such a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so, too. And like I said, every so often you run into something that kind of makes you jump up and down and get happy. And I had to mention that because it was something that that just came to me, and I'm like, woohoo, this is good. While we're on the topic, this is really, really good.
Absolutely. Well, and that's what this time of year is so much for me. You know, it is those magical happy accidents that just light you up and start things growing. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a question from the chat room. He wants to know what some of the specific foods are for Beltane. And I wonder, you know, during this time, if you use those foods for specific goddesses, that might be like a stronger kind of connection that way.
Absolutely. I love like red fruits at this time of year, strawberries and cherries and raspberries, and I love chocolate at Beltane. There's actually a spell for Aphrodite that would be really good for Beltane. It's a brownie spell. It's a baking spell. It's make brownies, and you could. It's in the book as a spell for passion, and that could be in your relationship, in your community, however you want to do it. But it's cayenne, cinnamon, and brownies, and using them as a dedicated offering to Aphrodite. So that's wonderful time of year.
Wow. And also, it's fertility food, basically.
Yeah.
The almond, which has been a symbol of fertility through the ages, you know, asparagus because it's phallic, bananas for the same reason. But, you know, and I just quick opened up the thing just to double check and things to see what some of the other foods are. And you're talking about chocolate, which the Aztecs referred to as the nourishment of the gods. And, that, you know, that's neat. Figs, garlic, ginger, honey, licorice even. Nutmeg, oysters, pineapple, which it surprised me a little bit. Truffles, wine, of course. I mean, yeah, it's a great time.
Anything that makes you feel luxurious when you eat it, when you offer it, that's good for Beltane.
Or at the very least, guilty. Yeah,
I mean, we should love it.
It's those guilty little pleasures that work so well, and having an excuse to use them, it's even better. You know that
exactly.
That's even better. And I was looking at, because I was thinking about goddesses for Beltane, and we also have gods for Beltane, and some of them are like Apollo and Bacchus and Pan, Cupid. Eros, well, Cupid/Eros, Odin, Orion, and the great horn god. And so, you know, I mean, girls can go to them too, you know, and if you want a little masculine energy here, you know, go to them when you need something too.
This is just a great time, if you need anything, to go to anybody. It's a very open time to manifest whatever you need to manifest, to ask for the help that you need to start beautiful new things. It's a very wonderful festival. It's one of my favorites. I love Beltane.
Mm-hmm. I do too. And I love the time of no time times. I do.
Yes.
They're very mysterious in a way. They're very kind of reverent in a way, because it's like, you just never know what's going to happen kind of thing, which is good and bad, but I choose to look at it as good because things should not be planned every inch of every day, every minute. I like the spontaneity.
Yes.
And so, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was pretty much just rambling.
Oh.
So.
the spontaneity, it's funny that you mentioned that because I blogged about that this week at Witches and Pagans. I have a detox bath ritual that I do, which is just baking soda and Epsom salts. And this week I just kind of spontaneously said, what happens if I put my homemade rose water in it? And it turned the bath water, this beautiful temple sacred pool, green. I have no idea why, Huh. And I just kind of went with it because it definitely was in that flavor of Beltane and Time of No Time, just kind of accepting the happy accidents and saying, I guess this is, you know, I need to do a little bit of spiritual pilgrimage right now, not just a detox bath. So it was a pretty powerful accident.
Yeah, kind of like a, ooh, now why did that happen? Yeah, because you're talking about rosewater, I'm thinking, okay, when you were saying that, I was going to say, oh, it turned pink. You know, when you said green, I'm like, wait a minute, yeah.
It was pink until the Epsom salts and baking soda hit it, and then it became like Nile River green, and I was just like, okay, here we go.
Wow, I kind of like that. And experimenting and changing things up, whether we're doing spell work or blessings or whatever, it's always important to be creative, I think.
Yes. Oh, and it's so easy to fall stagnant, especially in the winter months. So that's another thing I love about this time of year, is it really lights the fire and it gets us moving again. And if we're open to that creativity, we get some wonderful opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really important. Now, how important do you feel it is to work directly with goddesses for both spell work and in general?
For me, it's a deep part of my practice. It's just I've always had a draw to goddesses before I knew that that's what I should call them. I've always been pulled to that divine feminine energy. But you got to do the magic that fits you. I think that's one of the beautiful things about magic, are there's so many ways to practice and so many ways to make magic and so mm-hmm. many energies you can use. Mm-hmm. So there really is no one-size-fits-all. But for me, it always comes back to the goddesses.
Mm-hmm. And working with the goddesses does not necessarily exclude working with anybody else.
Right. Not at all.
Yeah. I think people need to know that it's not take it or leave it. You got one, you don't have the rest of them. Like you said, they're very patient and very loving and very giving, all the entities out there.
Yes.
And not jealous of each other. And we have free will. And I think they understand that more than we do sometimes.
I think so. I think they can take the long view when we sometimes get stuck in our little box.
Yeah, that's very true. But okay, so here's another $64,000 question, or the one, because it will come up at some point. What do you say to people who believe that goddesses are just myth and don't really exist?
You can still work with them, even if you think of them as a mythic structure. We can still learn from those stories. We can still gain strength and empowerment and maybe, you know, an opportunity to see our own mistakes a little differently. I think goddesses are still powerful whether you believe their entities or you believe their stories or you come somewhere in between.
I kind of like that answer. I didn't expect it, but I really like it. It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. If all right, somebody will probably say, okay, I need kind of an all-purpose goddess to kind of work with me on a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Who would you suggest that be?
Well, my default answer is Isis, because she's my all-purpose. But she's actually a good all-purpose in general, because one of her attributes is she's mistress of magic. So she kind of encompasses a lot of aspects. She's got maternal, she's got her relationship with her husband, she's got abundance and fertility and magic. So for me, she's very overarching, but I guess I would turn that question around and say, well, you know, who are you drawn to? Because if you want an all-purpose goddess, you're looking for someone for that long relationship, and you want to make that choice, not necessarily based on, you know, who's the textbook goddess for that, but who's the goddess for me.
Yeah, you just kind of have to go with your gut, I think, on that. And it may turn out to be somebody that you would never in a million years have chosen if you have the list in front of you, you know. They work in mysterious ways.
They do. And I'm always surprised at who resonates with me when I'm starting a new work or if I'm exploring a new goddess. It's always surprising who comes easily and who doesn't and who fits really well. It just even Isis surprised me, even though she kind of hung around my whole life before I kind of looked at her and said, oh, that's what. I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. But just be open to it. And again, as you said, trust your gut. We know in ourselves what we need, but we don't listen to that voice that often.
And sometimes we get whispers in our ear, and then we kind of think, oh, no, that's my imagination. And I always say when you hear whispers in your ears, first of all, you're not crazy. And second of all, pay attention, because usually when that happens, it's to your benefit. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, the boogeyman trying to tell you bad things.
Absolutely.
It's just somebody giving you like a little poke in the head or a little poke on the shoulder. Pay attention, because you really need to know this.
And that's something I wish I was better at. My husband teases me that the gods and goddesses don't bother whispering anymore because I don't listen. They wait and smack me in the face with a 2x4. And I wish I was better at hearing the whispers, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I don't know. I hear them in strange ways. I always hear them like at 3 a.m. or when I'm just starting to fall asleep. I very seldom hear them when I'm wide awake. And usually when I do hear them, they are yelling my name. I mean, loudly. Mm-hmm. And it makes me sit right up. Now, some of the messages that come through make sense. Some of them don't. But you have to go with it. But, yeah, I mean, I think I'd kind of like to be able to, and I probably could if I really took the time, to sit down and arrange it so that, you know, I can kind of hear at will. Rather than when somebody is so frustrated with me, they have to scream at me and wake me up, you know, and that's kind of like verbal slapping me about the head, you know.
Yes.
But, yeah, and I think we all have that ability to listen, but a lot of people, as I said, think that it's just a thought in their heads, and it came from their subconscious. It doesn't mean anything. It was something that they saw on TV last night or, you know, read in the newspaper, and it was just in the subconscious. But I don't think that's true, and I think if you take too much time to try and figure out, because once you hear something, then your mind starts, right? And then you start thinking other things. And once that happens, you've kind of lost the initial thing. I've always been taught, take the first thing that comes into your head and run with it and forget all that, because you can overthink it or you can change it in your mind. You can make, you know, take away what it was meant to be. So goddesses will talk to you just like anybody else, any other entity, but basically it's just good to be open to it and listen, pay attention. And I think, you know, if you're not sure what you're hearing, ask again or ask a question, you know? I mean, there can be dialogue, right?
Oh, absolutely. It can be a very open dialogue, too. It's, you don't have to sit there in the dark. You don't have to be confused. If you need to know, ask.
As opposed to spirit guides and things who will on purpose try to mess with your head in a good way, because they will only give you a partial answer, or they will just a hint. Because I think that happens because we are supposed to learn from it and grow from it. Like, we can't be pablum fed all the time. So they will help us just so far and then leave it to us to make that happen, to finish it, to learn, to grow and understand. So maybe the goddesses are a little bit more tolerant of us in that respect and a little more helpful in that respect.
Well, I think, too, at least for me in my practice, the goddess magic I do always ends up being about my own internal growth. It may have external manifestations and external intent, but ultimately what they're working for with me is me finding a better place, a better center, better strength. And so it doesn't need to necessarily be in riddles. Sometimes it just needs to be in repetition. So it can be a little different than that relationship with the spirit guide.
Mm-hmm. Well, repetition is sometimes good, because I think some of us sometimes don't get it the first time or don't hear it. So, you know, if it's important, you will. It's like tarot. I read tarot cards. And when there is a message, I don't care what kind of reading I'm doing. It could be a 3-card reading. It could be, you know, a 15-card reading. It could be a whatever. But the message will come up in just about every card. I mean, I always say that they think that we're stupid, because it will repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat until you just shake your head. You know, it's like, okay, I got you now, you know?
I read tarot cards too, and it's funny. I've had that experience reading for myself, and I've had that experience reading for others where I don't like the message, so I try again, and the message just gets louder and louder and louder. And it's like, there's no ignoring it. It is there.
Mm-hmm. And then who you're reading for, that's the other thing. Although there are instances when it really turns out in my favor or the querent's favor. I was reading a relative of mine, and it kept coming up saying, unfinished business, you know, there's something you need to know, to do, you know what that is, and every card, you know, it was like, quit procrastinating, every way possible, it said, get up and do what you need to do, what needs to be done, and he didn't say anything about it at the time. He was looking thoughtful, but he didn't say too much. But it just, you know, there were probably five cards that had that same message, and they kept getting stronger each one I drew. And he called me about 3 weeks later, and he says, I just need to tell you what that was all about, that repetition, that insistence that I take care of some business that I haven't taken care of. He says, I got to thinking about it. And he said, I needed to go to the doctor. And he said, I was putting it off and putting it off. And he said, I'll tell you right now. He said, I have lung cancer.
Oh,
but
my.
It's early stage, and I would not have found it if those cards had not kept badgering about taking care of that unfinished business over and over again. He says, that's what got me to the doctor. And that's what bought me some time. And he said, they could have saved my life. You know, they might have.
I'm so glad he listened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you couldn't help it because I was getting frustrated. I was like, oh, my God. You know, and I mean, enough. Okay, we get it. Okay, you know, and I'm saying, do you know what we're talking about here? And he was noncommittal. And but I guess because it was the fear of illness and he was afraid to go. And he just didn't want to deal with it. But I guess the insistence was so powerful that he finally bit the bullet. And good thing that he did at that time.
Oh, absolutely.
So this is why it's important for us to listen to messages, whether it's tarot or goddess messages or whoever else is whispering in your ear. We need to pay attention because, honestly, they do know more than we do. They've got more information than we do about certain things in particular, and we need to listen. I think it's vitally important, and a lot of people just don't. And that worries me sometimes.
Yeah, it is unfortunate how many people just close off to it. And I think, I know in my own life, my life is so much better when I listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and listening is also part of learning and growing, and they might not all be pleasant experiences, but they're necessary ones, you know. I mean, it's like the Tower card, you know. Oh, your whole life is just going to be shot to hell really quick, and there's so many changes, and things are going to fall that you don't need, blah, 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 but it's necessary, and you won't do it yourself, so we're going to do it for you, kind of thing.
Yes.
And I love when that card comes up because it's like, are you in for something really fast and hard? But it's not that bad. Or it doesn't have to be if you understand that it is necessary.
And that catalyst for change then is a powerful thing. And we are creatures of habit. It's hard to get us to change. So sometimes we do need that kind of a shake up.
Yeah, well, we hate change. I think most people are afraid of change because sometimes change is an unknown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what we're really afraid of. I think the unknown is can be scary. Doesn't have
Very.
To be, but it can be. And I'm just looking through the book here, and I swear, I just flipped it open, and here's a spell for major life changes. Hello. I wasn't really looking for it, but it came. And it is, oh, it's Mama Callie. Oh, boy. That's perfect. See, we're talking about the dog too. My dog and her. But this is such a simple spell. I mean, it talks about If you're going through a major life change, use this to gain clarity and strength. Very simple. You need your favorite blend of incense. You don't have to go at a specific kind. And I agree with you. You say sandalwood is always good, and I think it's a great overall incense. You need incense, an incense burner, matches, red, black, and yellow thread, twice as long as your wrist, and you could use ribbon or yarn. So there isn't any pain in putting all this together. And I'm just going to read this spell because it's just so simple and wonderful. You light the incense and you say, Mama Kali, help me be strong during this time of change. Then you tie three threads together at one end and you begin to braid the three threads. And as you braid, you think about the transition you're undergoing or the transition that you wish to happen. And when you're done braiding a cord, you tie off the end and you say, thank you, Kali Ma, for your strength. And then you leave the braid near the incense until it burns down. And then you wear the braided cord around your wrist as you move through the transition. And when you're on the other side of whatever happens, you burn the cord. Simple. It's a no-brainer. And just having that will have, you know, just wearing that will remind you during this transition, not as well as helping, but it will remind you of what you're going through and give you that strength just knowing that you're wearing it. So, I mean, these spells...
Which is so powerful.
Yeah. These spells are so wonderfully simple and yet very, very compelling and very to the point, but easy to do, and I think that's the key. I really do. So, how long does it take for you to come up with spells? Because I've got a couple of spell books, and there were times... Took me forever to come up with, you know, one in particular.
Well, and the way I approached this book, so this is fun, talk about the writing and the craft of it a little bit, I took it by goddess. So I worked goddess by goddess, and I tried to commit to finishing a goddess for 2 weeks. Sometimes it took longer, so it was a goddess I hadn't really worked with much before, because then that took more research and more working on my own. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the spells just come to me very easily. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, I'm banging my head on the keyboard. In the section about Sarasvati, I kind of channeled some of that frustration. Some of the spells that I ended up writing for her were spells for procrastination, spells for creativity, because I was struggling to find the right words, the right magic for her. So it depends, but yeah, it was a very interesting experience taking it goddess by goddess and just living with her and working through it and seeing, you know, what needed to be said. It was challenging keeping it to only three spells a goddess. So many times I wanted to say more. So it was interesting to try to hone it down to just the specific spells that work best with that goddess's attributes.
And also toning it down to only 25 goddesses. Now that has to be hard too, because there are, what, hundreds, thousands perhaps out there?
So many, yes. I know it was a challenge. It broke up nicely, though, because, you know, five chapters, five goddesses each. But, oh, there's so many more goddesses that I could keep writing goddess magic forever.
Well, there's book two. And then, and then the gods, you know, come in. And of course... each goddess kind of has a god counterpart. So, you know, that's a whole nother book there for you, too. The he and the she. Uh-huh. Oh, you could be busy for years. Absolutely busy for years. And then you could do the book on goddess gardening.
Yes. Well, I don't know. Not with my black thumb.
But in theory, it may work.
In theory. I try, and I love gardening. I love having plants. I should correct that. I don't actually love gardening, which is probably where I go wrong and probably where things start to die. Because I like having them. I don't necessarily like tending them.
Yeah, that can be a problem. I've actually been after a worm on my geraniums for the last 2 weeks that keeps eating out the blossoms before they bloom. Oh. And I can't find the guy, and it's really annoying. Anyway, did you get back to this? We are quickly running out of time. So where can people find out more about you, and also where can they get the book?
They can find out more about me on my website, which is Jen McConnell, JenMcConnell, only one L, .com. And there's links there to my column on Pantheos and my column on Witches and Pagans. And the book is available in ebook and paperback anywhere books are sold. So they can find it just about anywhere.
And they can also find you on Facebook, I believe.
Yes. Yep. I'm on all the social media links. I'm on Twitter as well. All those links are through the website. It's probably the easiest way to find them. But I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I blog. I'm all over the place.
And it's a good thing. It's a good thing because this is a fascinating book, and I highly recommend it. You know, to anybody. Don't have to be a witch. Don't have to dance around a cauldron. Very simple to do. So thank you so much for joining me tonight. And again, have a blessed Beltane, what's left of it, and into the new season. And I think down the line, we're going to have you back and talk some more, maybe more specifically about different spells and things. I don't think I've ever done a show of just spells. So you can throw in some of yours, I'll throw in some of mine, and we might do that. That sounds good to me.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I would love that.
Good. All right.
Well, thank you, Marla. I really appreciate it.
And if you will, stay on the line for just a second when we get done so we can thank you properly. And in the meantime, I want to thank everybody for listening in today. And to you too, have a blessed Beltane, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2013. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.